I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to the Green Bay Football Podcast. I'm Mike Clemens.
I'm John Dodds.
All right, John, you've got a list of topics we want to talk about today. And the first one, I think, is pretty intriguing. Mike McCarthy has been the head coach in Green Bay since 2006. Came to Green Bay after about a six-year run as the offensive coordinator of the New Orleans Saints. One Super Bowl win, most playoffs, a winning record. He surpassed Vince Lombardi for winning percentage. Is Mike McCarthy on the hot seat this season?
Sometimes after a long time at one place, players need to hear a different voice. I don't think the Packers are at that juncture. What I think happened last year, Aaron Rodgers got hurt. They were 4-1, had 7 offensive tackles that they went through with injuries that first 5 weeks. They were still 4-1. The year before, they finished the year 8-1. So combine those two, they were 12-2 in the last 14 games that Aaron Rodgers played in. So I think they're okay. I don't think you can evaluate anything with Brett Huntley at quarterback.
No, but as good as Aaron Rodgers looked, and I thought in September of 2017, Aaron Rodgers was playing the best football of his career. I think he was using everybody on the field. I think he was moving the ball a little bit better, not taking so much time in pre-snap adjustments, which he likes to make. But sometimes he's so careful about the turnover, he takes his own offense out of the rhythm. I thought he stepped that up and was moving the ball so well. Now, he's up against a tough opponent on the day that he broke the collarbone with the Minnesota Vikings. That looked like that was going to be a tough lock to pick till maybe the third quarter. But he never got that far. He was done by the first quarter after Anthony Barr drives him into the ground and breaks the collarbone in his throwing shoulder. So I'm telling you, though, as for whatever the Packers had put on the field with Aaron Rodgers in September and early October of last year, I don't think that team could have beat the Philadelphia Eagles in the NFC Championship game.
I think they could have been extremely competitive in it. I understand the Eagles, except for quarterback and I think offensive left tackle, they were pretty much injury free. And that's the key. That's the key in this. Green Bay was 4-1. And for whatever reason, four of the last 5 years, Green Bay has had not only injuries, but there have been bunched injuries at certain positions. Either it's cornerback. Last year it was offensive tackle. It was amazing. They went through Bulaga, and Bakhtiari was hurt earlier in the year. They went through even their backups, Murphy. He broke his foot. So they were employing their 5th, 6th, and 7th offensive tackles against Minnesota. The week before that was the high point of the year, was the win on Dallas, when Aaron Rodgers just masterfully took him down in about 30 seconds all the way down and hit Davante Adams in the end zone for a touchdown. That just showed you how good they could be. But, they did that with McCray at offensive left tackle. Actually, Taylor was at offensive left tackle.
Lane Taylor.
They had a new offensive guard. They put McCray there.
And McCray.
I remember Troy Aikman saying, it is amazing what James Campen has done for that offensive line.
The offensive line coach. Yeah.
So I just think if they're healthy and with some infusion of talent, a little bit of development from 2017, even with a tough schedule, I see 12-4
for this season.
For the season with the Packers.
Yeah, so that's the next question, though. If McCarthy actually doesn't win a Super Bowl, I guess is how it plays out in the playoffs. But I think he's on notice because he's on 2 years left in the contract and major restructuring of the Packers organization. Mark Murphy says, okay, enough. Ted Thompson had too much control of the whole team. And clearly for health reasons, it was in the back of the mind of Mark Murphy, the Packers president and CEO, that, you know what, after this year, this is going to be it for Ted. I mean, it's overwhelmed him, and he's relying on too many people around the office to, I think, to cross the T's and dot the I's. So he pretty much had it in mind that he was going to replace Thompson at the end of last season. Then that just, you know, the fact that they didn't make the playoffs expedited that. So with Thompson out of the way and a restructuring where basically the GM reports now to the president and CEO, Mark Murphy, as opposed to everybody in football operations reports to the GM, this appears to be more of a Mark Murphy decision. And I also think that Murphy made a really interesting move last year when he kind of publicly endorsed and gave a pay raise to Ed Policy, a vice president that's been involved with all this Titletown development, this huge market of various shops and attractions right across the street from Lambeau Field, similar to what the Patriots have had in Foxborough. Basically, Murphy's also kind of put a clock on himself to say, this is the heir apparent. So in the next year or two, we're going to get ourselves a Super Bowl. And then I got an opportunity to move on, to say, you know, look, I rebuilt the organization. We added more seating to the stadium, more revenue streams than ever before. And we got another Super Bowl ring out of it. I think that Murphy's kind of looking for an out. And if somehow McCarthy fails in a game management decision, in a key roster type decision, I think they could be looking at the fact that, you know what, this guy's now had this long run and he's become like the Andy Reid of the Philadelphia Eagles. Like, how many tries do you get? And maybe it's time, in fact, as you said, to get a new voice to get Aaron Rodgers back into a Super Bowl.
No, that's a very good point. Of all the people you mentioned, I would say Murphy is the one that could have the shortest tenure. I think that's an interesting point. The Titletown District, every time I'm up there, I'm absolutely amazed. It started with Bob Harlan when they won that referendum back in 2000, and they expanded Lambeau Field, and they're taking more property and developing it. It kind of reminds me of Wisconsin Dells without the water. I mean, they've created a destination now. And what Harlan's legacy, and I have to give credit to Murphy, who's kind of taken it and run with it, their legacy is Green Bay will never lose a player like Aaron Rodgers because Jerry Jones has more money. Green Bay has more money than 90% of the NFL teams. So it's cap management.
In the smallest market in the league, in professional sports.
It's such a great story, the last of the town teams. And why did they do that? Because in the 20s and the 30s, when they needed the money, they passed the hat door to door. And so that team, it's just amazing what one town, what a story that is, that at last of the town team. You don't see the Decatur Staleys or the Canton Bulldogs or all those teams. Only the Packers are there. In terms of, I don't think that this new management structure, I think it was done just to keep the cap, just to keep the major players. I think they liked the capologist. I think they liked
Russ Ball.
Russ Ball, mm-hmm. That's right. Russ Ball, they liked McCarthy. They wanted to keep everybody in and Gutekunst. And I'm sure Gutekunst doesn't want to work with the cap numbers. He's a Ron Wolf type. He wants to go out and find talent. The thing that drove Ron Wolf out of the NFL was the cap. He couldn't stand it. He just wanted to, he didn't want to make any decision. He let Craig Hendrick go because of the cap. He said that was the punter. He was that was the worst movie ever made. So that was the frustration. So by keeping Russ Ball, I'm sure they paid him a little for the effort to stay. But I think this new structure is only temporary in nature. And the interesting thing, though, is at some point, probably Gutekunst wants to bring in his own guy. And that's what you want to have. You want to have
his own coach.
His own coach.
Yeah.
And so I think you want to have that. But then you talk about health. I mean, Mike McCarthy, his brother died of a heart attack in his mid-40s. That Packer job is tough. I mean, Mike Sherman seemed to put on 15 pounds every year, and McCarthy seems a lot bigger than he used to be. Oh. And you just worry about how long can he last?
How much gas has he got
in the tank?
I mean,
And I know his wife is from Green Bay, and he's got a lot of ties from Green Bay. And but I think he is, as long as he gets along with one person, and that's Aaron Rodgers. And it's an interesting dynamic between Rodgers and McCarthy, because there's nothing that McCarthy can do at the end of games, any play he calls, where he's going to get credit. It's all Aaron Rodgers. Even at the end of that Cleveland game, the cameras were zooming in on Aaron Rodgers on the sidelines. He took the headset, and he's barking out and signaling.
To try and keep the season alive.
To keep the season alive.
I could come back and play against the Panthers and make a run on this thing. You know, here's the other point. So at the end of the season, Mike McCarthy stands up there and has his end of the season press conference. And when pressed two or three times, like, well, you know, 7-9, I mean, you know, how much further do you think this team could have gone if Aaron Rodgers had been healthy? And then McCarthy got pretty angry. And he said, look, that doesn't matter here, okay? I have to come up with a plan here and do everything it takes to get this team to the Super Bowl. And that may mean making some changes, some tough decisions, like getting rid of Dom Capers and two or three other assistant coaches in order to say, we got to change something. And so those were the guys that got thrown in front of the bus to make those changes. So now he's banking this all on Mike Pettine. And that's a huge question mark. We're not going to have a clue until the OTA start in the next week as to what Pettine's going to do with that defense. Mike McCarthy was very direct when, after the draft, they had spent the first round and the second round pick again on defensive backs. They've done that like five picks in the last 3 or 4 years. And McCarthy's reply was, yeah, between bringing back Tremont and these two draft picks we just got and bringing back Devon House, yeah, we're better at the corner than we've been in the last 2 years. A direct shot at what Ted Thompson had given them to work with and to compete with in camp. So McCarthy is on the hot seat. I mean, I really think so. He's going to have to there's going to have to be some compelling reasons as to why they don't get to the Super Bowl again this year. You know, when they lost to the Atlanta Falcons 2 years ago, they were so beat up. And the Falcons were on a roll and darn near beat the New England Patriots. So I think it's going to take that kind of a situation for McCarthy to still come back the following year, don't you? I think it's going to have to be a dire situation to say, no coach could have gotten them through that.
I thought that Ted Thompson was the force behind hiring Dom Capers back in 2009. And Dom Capers, when he had Woodson playing at an MVP level, he made him an MVP. And when he had Nick Collins and when he had Tremont Williams as a number one cornerback and Clay Matthews as a top rusher, when he had those pieces, they were a very good defense. I think they led the NFL in scoring defense in 2010.
And certainly they came up with hot turnovers too, especially Tremont.
And I asked the receiver, Reggie Wayne, the wide receiver for the Colts, and I was in the opponent locker room, and I said to him in 2011, what's the key to the Packer defense? And he said, Charles Woodson. He said, Charles Woodson is the only cornerback in the league that, as an offensive line, when we're running a rushing play, the offensive line has to account for the corner. He said, usually, and I quote him, usually the corner comes up and hits you with his purse.
Saying offensive, the center is looking for Woodson to see where this guy is going to be because he might screw up their running game?
Yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so he said he's the key. He's a cornerback who can hit like a linebacker. He plays like a linebacker, but he can also cover and he can blitz. He was the guy that was the big X factor. And when he got old and injured, the Packers started falling. And to Ted Thompson's credit, Ted Thompson knew the quality of talent he was giving Dom Capers and what Dom Capers was doing with it. Here's Dayton Jones. Here's Nick Perry. He's hiding Jared Bush. So Capers, I think, was thought highly of by Thompson because Thompson could look in the mirror and honestly assess what he was giving him. So he wasn't,
So how's that different now? I mean, because to me, Mike Pettine is a 100% Mike McCarthy hire.
It is. Now, Thompson, so it's interesting when Thompson left, Capers left. So they made a change with Pettine. And it was interesting when they made that change, I was watching Bill Polian. Bill Polian said...
The former Colts GM.
The former Colts GM. He was on ESPN, and they said, what do you think about Pettine? And he said, Pettine is a disciple of the Rex Ryan defense in Baltimore. He said...
And had a pretty good run with the Jets.
Had a good run with the Jets and became head coach of Cleveland and kind of got lost for a two-year period doing that like a lot of people do. But and he's been out of football for a year. But Polian said the key to the Pettine defense is the key to the Rex Ryan defense, which is you have to have two great cornerbacks. If you have cover cornerbacks that can come up, you can disguise your defense and run a 3-4 or a 4-3. It all depends on those corners. So that's why I think they focused on Alexander in the first round and Jackson in the second.
You know, though, I thought that's what made the difference in the Packers' Super Bowl run in 2010. Because, you know, in 2007, when the Packers lost to the Giants and Eli and, the you know, those guys went on to beat the Patriots, the difference in that season when they went 13-3, and it was Brett Favre's last year, was, you know, they had guys like Al Harris out there. They had slower corners, jam guys. When they won the Super Bowl 3 years later, you got Sam Shields and you got Tremont Williams. Dom had the luxury of just saying, I'll line up at your number one and your number two wide receiver with these two speedy corners. And they could take these guys, man, maybe do some jamming, but they could take, no one's going to get past these guys. And so I don't have to worry about double coverages or anything. The safeties can come up and help out with the run or the quarterback scrambling or whatever. And that's what made the difference in that defense. And like McCarthy was saying, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we haven't had that in corners here now in a while. We've got young, great athletes, but they were confused. They were not football guys in Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins. So now they bring back Tremont Williams at age 35, and that's not going to do much for speed. But I do like some of these draft picks. And so at the bottom line, to finish the question about Mike McCarthy, I do think that there's some pressure there on him. And I think this is all strange that, you know, he gets to bring in a new defensive coordinator. I guess if they're successful and win a Super Bowl this year, then everybody's got a job for the next 5 years. But I'm telling you, if he doesn't make a convincing case in the postseason as to why he should come back for 2019, you might be looking at a head coaching change and a total turnover in Green Bay.
You could be right on that. But it's one of those things where if you looked at 2017.
And I'll tell you, and you know what? Mike McCarthy will get picked up the next day by some other franchise, and he'll have more power than he did in Green Bay.
The interesting thing about McCarthy, I've always looked at him, is I was there and watched Mike Holmgren. In the Mike Holmgren era, Mike Holmgren comes across as a much more impressive coach than Mike McCarthy does.
Well, you know why? Because Holmgren is such an articulate guy. McCarthy, you know, Holmgren is a guy who probably is the lead lawyer in a law firm. Mike McCarthy is the smart guy on the loading dock, you know, the nuts and bolts, and let's get the job done quickly and get out of here.
Pittsburgh.
He is Pittsburgh. He's 110% Pittsburgh. When he talks during press conferences, his mind goes faster than his mouth does. That's why he stumbles on words so much, because the mind goes so much faster than his mouth. He's not a speaker. He's a thinker. He makes out to-do lists. He's very, very organized. And he also, when he walks in the door at that place, man, he creates tension and tempo. And everybody has to sit up straight. But that's what you want out of a head coach, that there's that edge like that all the time.
Well, if you ask me what the worst thing that happened to the Packers in the last 25 years, it was when Mike Holmgren's ego kind of got out of control after the Super Bowl win in New Orleans. And he wanted more power. And I think his wife is also a West Coast person that wanted to move the family at some point to the West Coast. So he leaves for Seattle. But not only does he leave, he takes all the assistant coaches with him.
Well, it was one big family, wasn't it?
It was, and he takes Ted Thompson, John Dorsey, Mike Reinfeld, all those people leave. So it took Ron Wolf, half of Ron Wolf's scouting staff out too. So now you had Ray Rhodes coming in, and you essentially waste maybe the last half of the Brett Favre era in Green Bay because you have a series of Ray Rhodes, Mike Sherman, and you don't have Ron Wolf making decisions with talent, evaluating talent. And one thing about McCarthy is there's something to be said. He was here in 2006. He's still here now. And the advantage of that, there's a lot of advantages. Number one, the scouts know exactly what type of players to draft and what they're looking for when they're on the road all last year. Oh, we need a fullback like William Henderson. We don't need a fullback like someone who could run, like a Zach Crockett or someone like that. What do we need as a tight end? We need a tight end who is more of a big wide receiver. We don't really need a blocking tight end. And so there's some the continuity that McCarthy, I can't overstate the importance of the continuity that McCarthy being here for
that's,
that time is.
That's an excellent point, John. I had not thought of or remembered about how many people walked out the door in those last couple of years of Ron Wolf's run, and when he just handed it over to Mike Sherman. And I've asked Brian Gutekunst the same thing about, wait a minute now, John Schneider's gone. John Dorsey's been gone. You got Alonzo Highsmith and Elliot Wolf just walked out the door to go join John over in Cleveland. I mean, we don't know anybody left in your staff. And he said, well, we got John Eric Sullivan now. He's my college scouting guy, you know. And Mike Wojciechowski, he's actually been here about 20 years. He's the pro personnel guy. The pro personnel guy, Mike, he's not going to be a GM anytime soon. John Eric Sullivan's actually a pretty impressive guy. But they've had a major drain. And they just lost Alonzo Dotson, who's the son of Santana, who's been one of their scouts. He just took off for the Jets. So there's been quite a revolving door by Green Bay standards in that scouting department. So let's talk about some of these draft picks and weapons that they've added to their team. They added 11 players in the draft, and they went right after corner to get started. And the first one is a kid out of Louisville, Jair Alexander, speed, 4.3 speed. At the mini camps, the rookie mini camps, we got to watch those practices. And first play, they lined up their best rookie receivers, those three receivers that they had, lined them up wide left, and here you go. Take this kid one-on-one. And nobody of all those rookies and some second-year players, nobody could get past Alexander. He looked pretty good. He looked like a young Tremont Williams when it came to right in your pocket, man. You weren't going to shake this guy.
It seems like the NFL has gravitated toward the New England model where you take a small wide receiver like Wes Welker and put him in the slot. And Alexander seems to me, that when you think of short, fast, 4.3 speed cornerbacks, you think, oh, we're going to put him on the outside. And no, they're thinking of putting him in the slot to guard the Welker, the short, choppy guy with that ball control Tom Brady.
Stephon Diggs.
Exactly.
Against the Vikings.
Exactly.
That's a great point. And they're trying to get taller when they can at corner, like Kevin King coming back from his second year. Now, he had two surgeries on that shoulder that was bothering all through his rookie season, your number one pick last season, who admitted to, at the end of the year to us that, yeah, that brace you guys kept on talking about, you saw me in the locker room with, my shoulder popped out a dozen times last year before they shut me down. So we'll have to see how the surgery and recovery is that. But then they've got the two veterans in there, Tremont Williams and Devon House. Those are probably the guys they're going to line up against the Bears in the season opener because that's just the way it is in Green Bay. You try and get the rookies and the second-year guys as many snaps and reps as you can in the preseason. But when the live bullets are firing, you put the veterans in first, at least to get your season started.
If you have to use King as your nickel, just avoid wear and tear on him. He appeared on ESPN Sports Science last year, and they measured his reach and his jumping ability. And they said it was the greatest reach and jumping ability of any DB they had ever tested. And they compared his jumping ability to Kwame Leonard of the San Antonio Spurs. It was identical. So there's something there, and he's also tough. He came up and he made tackles, but you just worry if he's a self-destructive missile where he's going to come up and hurt himself.
Great point. Like, first play of the game, we're down in Dallas. It's the Packers against the Cowboys. And so Dak Prescott hands off to Zeke Elliott, that, you know, the great running back from the season before. He runs out to his left, and Kevin King, the corner, the rookie, not afraid of him, stands there, squares off, breaks down, and drills him, knocks him back on his feet. Also manages to suffer a concussion in the hit, gone for the rest of the game and for the next 2 weeks. You know, that's the kinds of thing you're going to learn. Like, man, not on the first play of the game. You know, save that stuff for the playoffs or something. You gotta pace yourself, young man. But the good news is he's not afraid to step up there and act like another linebacker out there when it comes to making contact.
Show him some tapes of Sam Shields. There's a guy who would pace himself and know when to let guys run, and he could catch up. Shields was a guy who could do the most without the contact. Interesting, kind of an anecdote. I was at a social engagement in January, and I was introduced to the host's nephew, and the host's nephew was a player at Iowa. I said, "Oh, do you know Josh Jackson, the DB? Because I think I'm projecting my first mock draft. I had Josh Jackson at 14 for the Packers."
Really?
And he said to me, "My locker." I won't mention the person's name, but he said, "I was a freshman. My locker was right next to his. He introduced me to the team, the older guys. He unified the team. He was our team captain, great leader. All the intangibles. This guy. I mean, I think he was the heart and soul of our team. Josh Jackson would be a great pick." And he seemed very sincere about it. So I thought that was a really interesting pick where you traded back from 14 to 30 to 27 and then back
with
up to 18.
With
the Saints.
And the Saints gave you a first-round pick next year. That's just amazing to put that on the shelf. And then you've got your backup plan, your scenarios that you've been working on the last week leading up to the draft. Your draft board is ready the Wednesday before the draft, you know, the week before the draft. And then you spend the next week just trying to relax your brain and clear the cobwebs and get ready for, the tension on draft night, but also have a clear head and a list of backup plans, you know, plan B and plan C. So you get that great offer. The Saints just foolishly give up a first-round pick for you so that they can get their pass rusher, and then you're able to get back up to 18 and still snag one of those two or three corners that are still left on the board, and you get this Jerry Alexander, who they have had an eye on, were very much interested. They think that that's the other thing is you get with this kid out of Louisville is not only a guy that's with a lot of potential, maybe a Sam Shields kind of speedster, but he's a punt returner too. So now you've just helped out your special teams and your field position. He's probably going to start at punt returner if things go well. Then their second pick the next night in the second round is a kid out of Iowa. This Josh Jackson. He's bigger, about 6'1". I think he's about 220 maybe. I mean, he's pretty thick. Little lost out there at the rookie orientation, admitted as much. Very confident young man. But his eyes are wide open. There's a lot that he's going to have to learn at that pro level. It seemed like Alexander was very confident, very cool about being able to absorb, the Petten defense on the iPad. So Josh Jackson is a guy that's going to take some learning. But he looks like he could also be a very physical defensive back once they put the pads on.
And he can play outside. He can play slot. I think Alexander is more of the slot, the pure slot, to guard the choppy wide receiver like a Welker. Josh Jackson would be more of an outside person, but they don't need to play Jackson. If Tremont Williams is there, if King can come back, there's a lot of ifs, but they have some players. But again, as Polian said, the Petten defense, you have to have cornerbacks, and I think that's why they took cornerbacks 1 and 2.
Two more quick points about the defense. Oren Burks is the third rounder that they got out of Vanderbilt, an inside linebacker, a guy that they said that they watched him in his games. I think he had 15 tackles in a game against Florida. And Burks, what they like most about him is his speed to the football, his ability to react. He's 6'3". He started out as a safety because he played some of that in high school. And when I stood next to him, he kind of laughed out loud and I said, you really played safety? Because he's so big. He's got like, he's built like Cam Chancellor. He's that big. But they move him up to the inside linebacker spot there at Vanderbilt. And he used that quick reaction time to shut down the run early, to catch guys at the line of scrimmage and stop it before the run could develop. And I think that he could help out Blake Martinez. And he's going to really challenge Jake Ryan, who's, I think, into his third season out of Michigan.
Seems like the key to defenses around the NFL is to be able to guard the tight end or the slot wide receiver right. over the middle.
Right.
And this guy can do that, according to film. He ran a 4.59, and he's 6'3", but he's got arms of probably a 6'7 player. I mean, he's got very long arms. And they also think he goes about 230, 235 now. They can probably get him up to 250 at some point in his career. So I think he's the key guy. And when you're talking about two guys who can disguise defenses, if you had Josh Jones, last year's second-round pick, who unfortunately played three positions last year, and I think he got rookie overload and kind of paralysis by analysis, he was playing slot, corner, he was playing safety, and he was playing that linebacker hybrid. If you have Jones and Burks over the middle and you're a quarterback and you're looking at the numbers, each of those guys can play three positions. You cannot exactly identify what the Packers defense is in at that moment, and maybe you can confuse a wide receiver who's going to have to break off a route depending on what his read is with the quarterback. And with these rules where you can't touch any of these wide receivers downfield, you can't really jam them after 5 yards, the only thing you have is pass rush and disguise. Those are the only things you can do to possibly at least create doubt in a quarterback's mind.
So, John, the other thing, besides covering wide receivers, the other big question for the Packers defense coming off a 7-9 season was, where's your pass rush? Because Clay Matthews does not have the speed that he once had. Nick Perry is a bull rusher, but not a speed guy. And I think besides having Reggie Gilbert, who flashed at the last couple of games at the end of the season, I mean, he had like five different quarterback hits, pressures, a sack. He had some big plays against the Detroit Lions at the end of the season. He brought in Vince Beagle. He was lost for redshirted essentially with that foot injury that he had in his rookie season coming out of the Wisconsin Badgers. They did not stay there at 14 and take a pass rusher. And even when they did bounce back up, they took the corners first. I think when I talked to a guy from another team, he said, well, first of all, don't underestimate. You guys still have Clay Matthews and Nick Perry. Those are pretty good outside linebackers. But he said, you know, everything and I see what they're doing and what they're doing with the defensive line, both in the draft, Montrevious Adams, and bringing in the veteran Mo Wilkerson from the Jets, who really hasn't been a performer since he was playing for Mike Pettine. He said, I wonder if Pettine's going to go with like what Steve Spagnuolo did those years with the Giants when they won the Super Bowl with Mike Strahan and, you know, JPP and the rest of those guys, four guys every down bringing it. None of these Dom capers lines up with one guy on the line, two guys on the line. We're going to line up four and pound and pound and pound, and that's your pass rush. We will wear down the offensive line, and eventually we'll get to the quarterback, and that's how we'll speed up the quarterback clock for the defensive backs. What do you think?
In all the years I've been watching the Packers up in Lambeau, there's one skill that seems to be better than all the rest, and that's burst. If you have burst, you can accelerate to the ball. Charles Woodson had that. Clay Matthews has had that. Those are the elite players. The interesting thing, you said that Reggie Gilbert flashed last year. He did with burst. All of a sudden, you know, you look at the space and the spacing, and all of a sudden you see out of the corner of your eye one guy moving a little bit quicker than everybody else, and that is Gilbert. The other thing I noticed is that Vince Beagle, even though he was coming off an injury, so half the year was wasted, and he had all of camp that he wasted, but he had intensity and he had instincts. So I think Vince Beagle and Adams, the defensive lineman from Auburn, those are the $64,000 question marks, because those guys could really be good players and could take a step in their second year. So Beagle and Gilbert makes me think that's what Gutekunst was saying or was thinking. We could take Marcus Davenport at 14. No, we're going to trade back, get a number one pick, let New Orleans do that. And Davenport, I watched him at the Senior Bowl. He looked active. He had a sack. He had a touchdown off a fumble recovery that anybody could have done that. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time to pick it up. He batted a pass. But he just seemed to be a little bit odd in terms of, is he really into football? And he was more, I don't know how to say it, but it just seemed like he wasn't the tough guy that you want to have on the outside. That was my perception. But New Orleans, on the other hand, thinks that's the last piece to their, all they need is a little pass rush. That'll be really interesting to see if New Orleans is right on that.
Yeah, see, I thought everybody said that the Davenport also had to put on some weight, had to put on some more muscle, that he's a year away. And clearly the Saints want it now while they got Drew Brees. Otherwise, they go into total rebuild mode down in the Big Easy. So that does it for the defense. Now let's talk about the offense, and actually probably outside of Ted Thompson gone, Dom Capers gone, the biggest move the Green Bay Packers made was not to renew Jordy Nelson. They were going to spend $14 million on that wide receiver's speed. It was either speed and a combination of age, and maybe they know something we don't know in terms of knees. When no one doubts the chemistry and the ball skills and technique of Jordy Nelson, and he's probably going to look just like James Jones and light up the skies for the Oakland Raiders. But at the end of the day, they weren't going to spend that kind of a money on Jordy Nelson, and so they let him walk out the door. What did you think of that decision?
It surprised me. I thought what they were going to do is reduce his salary and then give him bonuses and incentives. And Aaron Rodgers would say wink, wink to his friend and hit him to make sure he made all those bonuses and incentives. And then
and helping him, trying to get him into the Hall of Fame, I think. I mean, so how much of this was them also trying to say, you know what, you go to Jordy too much. You got to work the entire offense. Davante Adams is the future, not Jordy. And you can't shortchange Davante Adams and some of these other receivers we're going to bring in.
I love Jordy Nelson to death, but I've never thought he was an elite number one wide receiver. And the reason I thought that is one-third of all his stats are the result of Aaron Rodgers extending plays. So when you're going back to pass and you're looking at the first two options on a route, he wasn't covered. Rodgers would extend the play, and then he was brilliant at finding the space, knowing what Rodgers was looking at, and his hands and his foot placement near the sidelines or in the end zone was remarkable. But that was on Aaron Rodgers. If you're with the Chicago Bears or some other team that had an average quarterback over the last few years, you don't get that last third of production. So I'm interested to see what he does in Oakland, if their quarterback can extend plays. And if they can't, some of his value, I think, is less. But the other thing, his last really big game that I remember was the Minnesota game a year ago. It's the end of the 2016 season, and he lined up in the slot, and he wasn't at the wide receiver position. But the guy that seemed to clear out all the space was Jared Cook. Jared Cook would go through the middle and clear out the linebackers and the safety, and Nelson would delay and find the open spot, and Rodgers would hit him for open spot. But I thought, that was Cook. So when Brett Huntley played last year and Nelson lined up in the slot, Bennett was out being flaky, quit on the Packers, and so they had no tight end. And
well, Lance Kendricks, but boy, he really underperformed. I thought he looked pretty good in camp, and they just did not go to him.
So they put 8 and 9 in the box to stop the run, and they pushed up front on Jordy Nelson, and Huntley didn't have a chance.
Yeah.
So, it surprised me that they let him go. But it doesn't surprise me that they let him go.
Yeah,
and it was a tough decision.
And don't get me started on the tight end Jared Cook. I just was watching that game from 2 years ago, the last playoff game the Packers were in Dallas against the Cowboys, and some of the plays that Cook made early in the game, and the key catch he made to set up the winning field goal. I watched him play with the Raiders, and he did great And I will never understand. He said that the Packers never even made an offer for him. When they saw they could get Martellus Bennett and Lance Kendricks to help out Rich Rodgers, that's why they made that decision, and it was a terrible decision. Terrible decision. So now, Cookie, as Aaron Rodgers calls him, gets to play with Jordy Nelson and Derek Carr and Derek Carr out there for the Oakland Raiders. So the Packers then let Jordy go, and they get right into the draft, and they draft three wide receivers to back up. And so your wide receivers are Davante Adams, Randall Cobb, Geronimo Allison, Michael Clark, you know, who's an outsider, but they like the height and the athleticism and the ball skills. We'll see if he actually can turn into a wide receiver and find the routes and the timing that Aaron Rodgers will require. The first guy they take, it to me, John, looks like more like a possession receiver in the kid out of Missouri, Jamon Moore.
How did you think he looked in camp? Did you know?
I thought he's almost built like JerMichael Finley. I mean, he's pretty upper body. We really didn't get to see enough of him in terms of breakaway speed and what it's going to be to get away. The interesting thing was this. The Jamon Moore and the second receiver they took in the draft, Marquez Valdez-Scantling, out of South Florida, for that mini camp for 2 days, they lined him up in the slot. Every rep, every snap they took was in the slot, not at the wideout. What's going on there?
Well, it's interesting because I went back and watched the Senior Bowl workouts, and Jamon Moore, Mike Mayock said, look at this guy's extra gear, and he would go down and then hit this extra gear and blow by defensive backs.
Having an afterburner.
He's got an afterburner, and I thought, ooh, what if he has an accurate quarterback? So I looked at him as a step above Geronimo Allison. So Geronimo Allison with a little bit more height, a little bit more speed. So I think that is a player to watch. I know
Jamon looks like about 6'2", but pretty thick, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, you know what? He could be similar to James Jones, but hopefully a little bit faster.
Larry McCarron made a comment about the camp, and he probably gets a chance to watch a little bit more than the typical because he works with the Packers. But he was saying that Jamon Moore flashed something that he wants to take a look at some more. And when Larry McCarron says that, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a guy to look at, a big guy with an extra burst. He does drop passes, but they all drop passes.
Well, so did Marquez Valdez-Scantling, the second receiver they took in this year's draft. He's out of South Florida. Kid that went to a puppy farm for NFL players. He played with both the Griffin brothers that are now up with Seattle, okay? So he played amongst a lot of NFL-quality players as a kid in high school there. He's a tall, very articulate, 6'3", really got speed, but he dropped some balls, man. He dropped a couple balls in the drills. He dropped one that he could have had that was in his hands. He would bobble the ball a couple of times over the middle. Now, this is just the rookie minicamp. I mean, my gosh, the guy's still looking for where to park his car and where his locker is.
He's on overload, sure.
Yeah. But, you know, that's just, you know, what we saw there. The third wide receiver they took, though, Equanimeous St. Brown out of Notre Dame. There's some concern there that his dad, who's a former soccer player, I believe, you know, might be a little bit of one of those stage fathers, if you will, promoting his kid. Gave him a long name and added a saint to his name just to, you know, make him a star. So Equanimeous says, EQ, I asked him, what's your nickname? He said, EQ. He said, but I think more and more people are pronouncing my name correctly. He's 6'5". He's really marketable, by the way. I mean, my gosh, he kind of reminds you like a Tony Gonzalez. He's a wide receiver, but he looks like an all-pro tight end. They lined him up at the wide receiver position up against the first-round pick, Alexander. Now, Alexander was fast, went toe-to-toe, but man, he's really got some game. And it was interesting, you know who his quarterback was in his junior year was DeShone Kizer, this quarterback that they bring in with the trade for Demaryius Randall out of the Cleveland Browns. And I kept on asking him, well, I mean, that's the tape. This is why you're here in Green Bay. Everybody thought athletically he should be a third-round pick. He drops to the sixth because some people weren't impressed with how he carried himself, you know, that they thought maybe he's a little bit of a prima donna, you know, a little bit too much strut coming out of Notre Dame, and that there was a drop-off there in his senior year. He would not talk about DeShone Kizer. If you asked about, well, what about the opportunity to play with Aaron Rodgers, his eyes would light up, you know, because you know what? That's who he wants to be catching footballs from. Not Kizer, not Brett Hundley, not anybody else. You know, he wants to say, I can hook up and follow the instructions and the perfectionist in Aaron Rodgers and be a target for him.
Yeah, there's Brown has the baggage. His dad was a
Saint Brown.
Saint Brown was formerly known as Brown.
Yeah.
The artist formerly known as Brown. His dad was a Mr. World, and his dad was had a weightlifting program that he had his son on that I think he pretty much ignored the Notre Dame weightlifting program, and that was one of the signals or signs on the draft board that I think that's one of the reasons why he fell. But if they can get this guy focused, there might be something there. That was a pretty good late pick on the third day for a quality guy like that. He does have, kind of like when Aaron Rodgers was young, he worked out with Ruvell Martin in those years when Brett Favre was the starting quarterback.
Loved working with Ruvell.
Loved him.
Yeah.
And I think Kizer and St. Brown could have the same type of relationship. I think the most underrated move the Packers made this year was picking up Kizer. I think I think Kizer surpasses him in every respect. He's a little bigger. He's a little faster. His arm's better. He's quicker. Everything about Kizer, if Kizer came out this year, Kizer would have been a number one pick.
Well, that's what Mike McCarthy said.
Yeah.
I asked McCarthy this at the end of the rookie minicamp. I realized that just the way things had played out between the draft, some of the trades that were made, etc., we really didn't have a strong assessment on DeShone Kizer and what the quarterback guy, guru of Mike McCarthy, thought of this guy. Why did they bring him in? And I asked around, I guess McCarthy was briefly asked about it at the NFL owners meetings in Florida, but there really wasn't much there. So last question, because we're supposed to be there to talk about the rookies. I said to McCarthy, yeah, by the way, you know, the team made a pretty aggressive move. John, when's the last time they traded for a quarterback in Green Bay? It was Favre, right? 25 years ago?
Right.
They bring in a backup quarterback in a trade. That's very unusual for the Green Bay Packers. So I said to Mike McCarthy, what do you think of this DeShone Kizer, who even though he had, 15 losses last year for the Browns? And he said, I think that if this guy had been in this year's draft, he would have been a top five pick. He would have been among those top five quarterbacks. And he talked about, you know, athleticism. And he also said this. I said, what's it going to take for him to be, you know, your backup quarterback? And he replied with saying, I think this guy could be a starting quarterback in the NFL. Well, that just blew up in a slow news week in the NFL. But that became a major story that the Packers think that much of Kizer.
And the Packers liked him enough to consider drafting him instead of King when they traded back in the 2017 draft. They took King with the top pick from Cleveland with that pick, and they were debating whether to they took King with that pick, but they're debating whether to take King or Kizer. And also they had a trade worked out with Cleveland, who had the 52 pick in that second round, where the Packers might have traded back to 52 for more, and Cleveland was going to come up and take Kizer. So then there's another situation that Cleveland then called them and said, if Kizer doesn't fall to us, we will give you a third round pick for Brett Hundley. So there is all sorts of weird quarterback
scenarios
and relationships going on between Green Bay and Cleveland. And it's ironic that Dorsey took over and Elliott Wolf is down there. And now you're probably going to see a lot more of those scenarios. But when it comes down to it, Demaryius Randall was the 30th player taken in that draft right in 2015. And he flashed talent, but he's flaky. And the end of the line for him was when he intercepted the ball, returned it for a touchdown against Dallas, and he took the he took the ball and threw it at the Dallas quarterback and got a 15-yard penalty, and Troy Aikman said, why doesn't this kid just grow up? I mean, I thought, exactly. So, but to get Kizer for Randall, and not only get Kizer, you can get, they had a flip-flop of fifth round and fourth round picks. So that was critical.
One last point about the offense, and that's the right side of the offensive line. Right guard, right tackle. You know, I'll just say that between Spriggs, Kyle Murphy, whether they use Justin McCray again at right guard, they bring in Cole Madison out of Washington. Those are all strong candidates for the right side of the offensive line. I think they got plenty to work with there. I really do. There was also two guys that they had at the mini camp that walked on. Sonny Ogdagwu from UCLA and Jacob Aseldek from Arizona, both 6'7", 6'8". Huge guys that maybe have a shot at being backup right tackles. And, of course, there's that Brian Bulaga question about if he'll be back in September or October coming off another ACL.
See, I agree with you. People have asked me on my blog whether Green Bay should have taken an offensive tackle the right side of that line. Guard with Jari Evans is a big question mark. I disagree. I'm in your camp. You have Murphy coming back. He was the starting right tackle and left tackle first two games last year. Then he broke his foot. He'll be back. You have McCray, who could fill in at the tackle position or the guard position. You got Patrick, who can play center or he can play guard. And you have Bulaga and Spriggs coming back. I'm a big pupless guy. I like to take my 53-man roster, and I like to expand it whenever I can. Bulaga could be your 54th on the pup, just like Beagle was last year. And then you could have possibly Spriggs as your 55th member. So that means you can see how the offensive line goes, and then later in the year you can plug these guys in after 6, 7, 8 weeks or whatever before November, like 15th or whenever that limit is. And also they drafted Cole Madison. Cole Madison, I looked at in the Senior Bowl, and I looked at the Senior Bowl week. He's a very good pass blocker. So I think that was a guy. I think that's a guy that will make the team, and you could possibly start him. And then the one guy that just...
And talking to Cole Madison,
yeah,
he's like another TJ Lang or Josh Sitton. I mean, smart kid, you know, loves playing football. A guy who's also got a lot of basketball. He played a lot of basketball, and they love his footwork because of that. So Cole Madison's, he could be a starter.
Well, in the one-on-one drills at the Senior Bowl, Polian was there making comments, and he said, oh, that Washington State guy won another one. I like his feet. Doesn't have an anchor, needs to get stronger, but he's got the feet. He can all those guys have to get stronger. So I thought he looked impressive in the pass blocking, and they played him at guard. They didn't play him at offensive right tackle. And then we mentioned this earlier in the podcast, the ace in the hole is Lane Taylor can play left tackle. That was an interesting move. Josh Sitton couldn't. So people also ask me about Spriggs, what I think about Spriggs. Spriggs showed very little until he came back from that first injury, and he came back in the Pittsburgh game. And that's when he kind of finally showed that he had a pulse. A little bit, he had a couple of really good blocks. He kind of got into it, more aggressive. He's got all the intangibles. He's got all the feet. He's got all the talent. It's almost as if paralysis by analysis. He's thinking instead of just doing and reacting. And I go back to one Green Bay Packer who was a second-round supplemental pick, Mike Wall. They drafted him out of Navy because I think he got the boot because of steroid use in Navy. Ron Wolf took him in the second round, he said, here's my left tackle. Put him at left tackle, and he was a turnstile. Put him at left guard, and he was outstanding, all pro, and probably the best offensive lineman Green Bay had. So you never know when the light goes on with a guy like Spriggs. So
Bill Polian, in a break I did with him on SiriusXM on NFL Radio, he said, well, how does Jason Spriggs look? I said, he's struggling in camp. And he said, yeah, I kind of thought that was going to be a project out of Indiana. I thought that was a curious pick for a second round. So there's plenty of options, I think, that Mike McCarthy and James Campen have got for that right line to develop someone, maybe Jason McCray, as a backup center for Corey Linsley as they move on. Lastly, and quickly, we'll get to special teams and who drafts a punter and a long snapper in a draft. Well, Brian Gutekunst did. How about that?
Yeah, that was that opens himself that opens him up for criticism. But Green Bay, not only did they go through seven or eight offensive tackles, they went through four long snappers last year. The long snappers couldn't stay healthy.
Right.
I mean, and that cost at least one field goal. I remember where Crosby the snap was bad and Crosby missed a field goal, and Crosby must have been just wondering, rookie holder. Didn't know who the snapper was. It was a tough year. Obviously, that they like those two. Now this J.K. Scott, the punter. I happen to watch about 10 Alabama games because you're a kid in the candy store if you're preparing for a draft and you just watch the Alabama team. And that guy would hit rockets. I mean, it was amazing how high he would hit. And I hate to bring up Bill Polian. Seems like the name of the hour. But at the Senior Bowl, one of the guys was saying to him, you know, it's really hard to evaluate punters here at the Senior Bowl, and, you know, the punters don't mean much. And Polian goes, the heck, look at this guy. He hits rockets. And he points at Scott. He goes, this guy is a game changer. He changes the field. I thought, that's an interesting comment over a punter.
So, about 6'5", articulate, a little bit of out there. You know, I think this kid... out of Alabama, J.K. Scott is a guy who wears a lot of tie-dye T-shirts and drives around in Volkswagens or something. Kind of a hippie dude.
Went up to Donald Trump at the White House visit,
yeah,
and prayed with him.
Can I pray?
He said, can I pray with you? And he put his hand on the president, which I'm sure the Secret Service were looking at that. And then a group of Alabama players kind of went over there, and they all prayed for him. He said, yeah, sure, and whatever. And so that was kind of interesting, but... The follow-through with his leg is one of the highest that scouts have ever seen.
And he seems to be pretty good at the placement, too. What was it? He had, like, the fewest returns of any of the major teams last year because he just put the ball inside the 10 and didn't give the teams anything to return. So that, and they got the long snapper as well. This was an interesting story about this kid who was going between high school and college, had an AC on the left knee, then on the right knee, and then the left knee again, Hunter Bradley out of Mississippi State, who at one point didn't know if he was trying to play, go out for tight end then. And after his third ACL, he said, I think I got the message that maybe I should just stick to long snapper. I believe his father was a very good long snapper as well. And so he's the kid that they're going to go with, obviously, by using a draft pick to be the long snapper for J.K. Scott and for Mason Crosby.
Yeah, if you're long snapping Rob Davis, you have these guys that are going to be there for a decade. So he could be there for a decade if his knees hold up. But the fact that he did play means that you have an athlete running down, possibly being able to make a tackle on punt returner, because that's a bad space if you can't fill a lane because you're not an athlete.
Packers have OTA practices through the month of May and early June. Then they, in the second weekend of June, they wrap up with their mandatory minicamp, and then they excuse everybody, and they're off for about 4 or 5 weeks until training camp starts on July 25th. This is Green Bay Football with John Dodds, Mike Clemens. Thanks for listening.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.